south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, now, here's something pretty disgusting. Everybody knows that Latins are nuts about celebrating the Day of the Dead. That's the time once a year when Latins go down to the cemetery. They call it the cementerio. I always thought the word kind of funny because it's cementeri, which makes it a good memory aid anyway. So as with any Latin holiday, they celebrate it with a fury. Actually, it's not a day and it's a week. As I mentioned in past shows, Latins don't have any celebration days. They always last a couple of days to a week. Anyway, that's when they go down to the cemetery and they paint up the graves, put flowers everywhere, spruce up the landscaping and such. And that's really the only maintenance done at the public cemeteries. I'd say about 95% of all Latins are buried in a public cheapo cemetery because they can't afford to buy a plot in a nicely manicured private cemetery. That, by the way, is how you tell the difference between a private and a public cemetery. The private ones are all nice, manicured, gated, guarded, and all that, with maintenance guys and gardeners on duty all the time. Whereas those gigantic public cementerios, they are awfully disgusting. What do I mean by that? Well, they always seem to be in pretty decrepit sections of town, which means you got bums and vagabonds wandering through, peeing on the gravestones. I'm not kidding. Stray dogs running around, doing their things as dogs will do. They've got vendors there selling junk, kids running around, bums crashing there at night, litter everywhere. Not that the dead would mind, but not recommended for tourists and sightseers, you know? And the reason why I'm mentioning this is because the other day I happened to walk past one of those cemeteries where I noticed a beat up and decrepit sign that said, "By law, we fumigate 3 times a year." And I thought, what's that all about? So I asked the Latin person I was with. And he looked at me and said, "Well, that's the law. They fumigate cementerios a couple times a year to prevent disease, sickness, and plagas." And I said, "What? Say that again?" Then he looked at me strange and said, "Why, you don't do that up in the States?" And I said, "Why would we?" Then he went on to explain that in earthquake country and in wet, hot tropical climates, sometimes the tombs crack open and oftentimes new graves, cheaply done, aren't sealed correctly. So he said years and years ago, ordinances were put in place so that cementerios had to be fumigated a couple times a year or more. Then I thought, man, that's kind of disgusting. Now, I've been to 5 or 6 funerals down here, and I've been in maybe 4 or 5 cementerios, and twice I was in one of those decrepit public cemeteries, and looking back, I realized my Latin buddy was right. Some of the older tombs, the osorarios, had big cracks in them. Even some of the newer ones had hairline fissures. So I guess when all else fails, fumigate. So then I said to the guy, "What about those much nicer, more expensive private cementerios?" He said, "Periodic fumigation is the law, so they have to do it too, but they most likely don't need to. Since they're private and well kept up, certainly that's not a problem." Anyway, just a little more of the bad and the ugly here in Latin America. And why, if you or any one of your loved ones kicks the bucket down here in Latin America, you'll probably want to prearrange a spot in a private cemetery or skip all that crap and do the cremation thing, which in my mind is a much better alternative. Enough said about that, huh? Now, a couple of shows ago, I was talking about getting things shipped from Amazon, eBay, and all that up in the States to anywhere in Latin America. I mentioned how since most of those sites are in English and not in Spanish, people with a little money down here will go to one of the many mail and freight forwarding and shipping offices, sit down at one of their computers, and with help from a bilingual aide, order stuff from Amazon, Alibaba, and eBay. So at the very same place you pick up your orders, you'll see Latinos who don't speak English ordering stuff from Amazon and such. Oh, and I mentioned sometimes you get free delivery if it's within the city limits and it can fit on one of their motorcycles. Otherwise, if you're located far away from their home office, which is almost always near the international airport, they might charge just a couple of bucks to bring it to you wherever you are within that Latin country. Such a deal, huh? It really is. Now, I mentioned Latins with a little money who want to order from Amazon or eBay, whatever. They're not too successful at doing that from home, unless their English is really good, and it's usually not. Which is why they go to the offices of those shipping and mail forwarding services, where they have a computer or two and someone who's bilingual to help with the ordering. Oh, and by the way, a lot of Latins with little dough don't have a credit card in U.S. dollars. You need that too, of course, if you're going to order from one of those big outfits like eBay, Amazon, Alibaba, whatever. That's another reason why Latins use those services, because the freight forwarding company will pay in dollars and you just pay them back in the local funny money. However, gringos and expats living down here in Latin America almost never walk in and use that service. Why would they when they can sit on their computer at home and order directly? Ah, but therein lies a small problem if you're ordering stuff from your computer and you're in a Latin country. Since every time you get on a website to order a product, they capture your IP address, they know what country you're ordering from, and many, many times when you're right in the middle of the ordering process, there'll be a pop-up window that'll flash and say something like, "This item does not ship to Honduras, Salvador, Nicaragua, Peru, whatever." That'll stop you dead in your tracks. Well, not so fast. The point is, you don't want your stuff shipped directly to Nicaragua, Honduras, whatever, from Alibaba or Amazon. That's why you have to hook up with one of those many freight and mail forwarding services that has an office somewhere in Florida, generally Miami. And as mentioned before, when you hook up with one of those services, it doesn't cost anything, but when you send them an email, they'll send you a code. So when you order from Amazon, whatever, you put your name and that code in the shipping address. So when it lands at their offices in Florida, it'll automatically get sorted and directed by your name and that code to their office in your particular Latin country. So forget about the pop-up window warnings. In your case, it doesn't mean a thing. Whatever company you're ordering from won't know your final destination. They'll just think it's going to Florida. And it is. Is that clear enough? So then why would you get that pop-up window for certain items? Well, for example, a friend of mine ordered a scope and a laser for his .22 rifle and the window popped up. We don't ship outside the U.S. Same is true, from what I understand, if you're ordering a drone. I know an expat who just went through that. No big deal. Went to his freight forwarding service in Miami and he's got it now. So the freight forwarder doesn't really care if Amazon says they won't ship it. They'll ship just about anything. Almost. Now, on an unrelated subject, here's something else I thought you'd be interested in. This is an article from Panama's biggest newspaper from last Sunday entitled, "Pilotos de camiones, carros y buses prefieren no pagar multas porque ellos saben no hay sistema central de archivos para conectar." So what in the hell does that mean and how does it apply to gringos and expats? Well, loosely translated, it says, bus, car, and truck drivers prefer not to pay their parking tickets and moving violations. Why? Because they know the systems are not connected to the government's central database. In other words, if they don't pay, they still get away with it. For example, unlike up in the first world, if you don't pay your tickets, eventually it'll catch up to you either when you renew your driver's license. Worse yet, if you get pulled over, they'll run your name and your license and they'll find out you've got outstanding warrants and they'll throw you in the clink. Now, you see, this is what I mean about Latin America and why it's so nice living down here. Their government bureaucracies are so corrupt, inefficient, and, well, unconnected. People look at tickets like a joke. In most countries except the gringoized countries like Costa Rica, where they come down hard and heavy on tourists because they have the money. But elsewhere, off the gringo tourist trail, locals are just annoyed by tickets and don't pay them. Some system, huh? In a way, you gotta love it. We're talking about the year 2017 now, and they haven't even got their parking and moving violation systems connected to a central database. Again, what's not to like about governments that are so full of scatterbrained morons, they can't get that straight. And even if they could get it together, which they will eventually, the lardass, bureaucrats, and scumbag politicians would skim and misallocate the funds anyway. But the point is, you just have to laugh because they're just now getting around to talking about all the dough that's fallen through the cracks. Yep, they're thinking about all that money that's not coming in that they can't yet get their hands on to steal. Same thing goes for paying your property taxes here in Latin America. Now, admittedly, they're extremely low compared to first world property taxes. Even so, it's money in the crapper because you don't get any services for that. Come to think of it, you never get your money's worth when you pay your property taxes up in the States either. Though, the big difference is, If you have a house up in the States that's worth, let's say, $250,000, you might be paying $10,000 a year for property tax. Whereas that same house, if it were here in Latin America, even in a very secure, nice, upscale, gated, guarded community, it'll probably only cost you a couple $100 a year. And if you don't pay your property taxes on time, they've got no law enforcement or agency that's going to knock on your door. You can put it off for years, sometimes decades. The only time you'll have to ante up is if you sell the place. The prospective buyer will check on that, or his lawyer will, and you'll have to pay up. Now, of course, if you're delinquent on your parking tickets, moving violations, or your property taxes, there'll be penalties and interest accumulating. But still, people won't pay because it's so unenforceable. So when municipalities run out of money, and they're always short of dough, what malignant government appendage isn't? Anyway, generally once a year, you'll see signs popping up along the highway and ads in newspapers announcing if you pay your property taxes, moving violations, or parking tickets by the end of the month, the interest and penalties will be exonerated. Yep, you can count on it. It's like that everywhere in Latin America. What's not to love about that? And now for some more good news. From time to time, I talk about the fact that you can really get off the grid here in Latin America. I mean, completely. You've heard me say, if you set yourself up with two 100-pound tanks of propane gas, if you get a gas stove and a gas dryer, that should last a family of four more than a year. And the cost? If you've got the two tanks and you're just getting them charged up, under $100. Oh, and a lot of people, especially ones with maids and cleaning ladies, will have them hang the clothes out on a line. So if you don't use the gas dryer, your two 100-pound propane gas tanks used just for cooking should last over 2 years. By the way, a gas stove and a gas dryer cost around the same as an electric one. So don't buy the electric ones. That would be foolish. Ew. Because, you know, these days, every country's electric grid's at risk. Of course, yours up in the States, much more so than the grids down here. But still, when that big reset button gets hit up by you, who knows what's going to happen to the rest of the nearby electric grids? So if you're down here in Latin America or you're working on your plan B and you're looking to get off the grid to be as self-sufficient as you possibly can, step one would be to use propane gas. And step two, buy a solar hot water heater. Remember, down here you don't have to worry about frost, so there's no heat exchanger and the systems are of a much simpler and therefore less expensive design. Therefore, about a quarter, even less, of what you'd pay for one up in the States. In fact, a gringo friend of mine just bought an 80-gallon solar unit. That would be big enough for a family of four, but you still have to do a little planning, depending on the days and the sun. And since there is no frost and snow, those things last a lot longer down here, too, so he should be able to get 20 to 30 years out of it. That's 20 to 30 years of free hot water. Now, you've heard me mention many times that the rainy season here in Latin America is so, well, rainy, that if you build yourself a big cistern and collect your rainwater, oh yeah, that's right. Yep, down here, it's your rainwater. You can collect all you want. Well, if you do it right, you'll never be without. In fact, you'll have way more than enough. Plus, of course, if you're out in the boonies and homestead, you'll have your own well. If so, you'll need electricity to run the pump. And note, if you live in a gated, guarded community, which many gringos and expats do, you'll have your own well too. It'll be a big old community well, but you won't be on municipal water. But if you happen to live in the city, there is a pretty good chance you'll be on municipal water, though some city buildings, especially high-rise residential towers, have their own wells too. So if you're going to go off the grid, it should be in your plan to divert that rainwater into a nice big cistern. Now, you also know that municipal water systems here are spotty. They're almost never putting out 24/7. In fact, almost all Latin families, middle class enough, have a small plastic cistern up on the roof. That does serve the family fine. They're never without water because it fills up during the odd nighttime hours, usually, where the water pressure is very low and it's just dribbling. But it does fill the cistern. However, the average cistern here is way too small if there's an emergency or if you want to go off the grid. Most people down here have a cistern that's 500 gallons or less, and you really need to have a couple of thousand-gallon cistern if you're going off the grid. And something of that size is way too big to go on your roof. You'll have to put that under your driveway or bury it in your backyard. Now remember, the big ones like that are not plastic or metal tanks like in a tanker truck. They're made out of block, rebar, and concrete. with the inside, the part that holds the water, painted with a kind of a swimming pool epoxy. The fact is, you could build a really nice big one that'll hold, let's say, 2,500 gallons for around $500. And once filled, that'll last a family of four at least a month, maybe two if you skimp. But when it rains, it really does pour, so you can pretty much always keep that thing topped off. So anyway, if you're thinking about going off the grid, and you should as much as you can, no matter where you are in the world, just to review, step one would be to go with propane gas for clothes drying and cooking. Step two, get a solar hot water heater. Step three, a big time water cistern that'll last a family a month or two. And step four, solar electric. Now, in the near future, I will do a program or two completely on setting up your own solar electric system here in Latin America. Now, there's one very important thing to remember if you're gonna go solar electric. That is, if you live in the Altiplano, there'll be no heating and air conditioning, so you could size down your system to half or less than what you'd need in most places up in the States. However, if you're living in Latin American lower elevations, like, for example, on or near a beach, you will have air conditioning going 24/7 in at least one room. That would be your bedroom, and probably other rooms too. So you'll have to size your system for that. However, since insulation is almost unheard of here in Latin America, you could be the first person in your neighborhood to have it. Now, speaking of paying nothing or next to nothing regarding electric bills, you know that if you have solar electric up in the States, if you produce enough, you can sell it back to the power company. You also know that if you produce more than you use, your electric meter will run backwards. And if your solar electric system is big enough, you'll put back more into the grid than you use, and you'll actually get a credit or a check. Of course, they don't buy it back from you at the rate they sell it to you. They'll buy it back at the wholesale price, about half of what you have to buy it for. But still, what a feeling, huh? Having an electric company give you dough for a change. Now, I do get emails from people asking me if they could do the same thing down here in Latin America. Well, up till now, the only Latin country that allowed you to sell power back to the grid was Costa Rica, but that plan is not working out so well. Turns out the gringos and expats I know who are trying to do that there never seem to get a check from the electric company, which is a monopoly mostly owned by the government. Figures, huh? However, since the meter does run backwards, at least you can drop your bill down to zero if you produce enough. However, if you overproduce and are due a check and go to the government and try to get it, we're talking about Latin American bureaucracies here, a bottomless pit of fat, lazy, lard-ass morons. Though generally, sincerely nice morons, as opposed to government bureaucrats up in the U.S., like expat Eddie once said, if you're up in the States and you think you've been wronged by the government, even if you're 100% right and you've got a terrific case, forget about going after them. It's like screwing a porcupine, Eddie says. It's 1,000 pricks against one. Whereas here in Latin America, the low-level bureaucrats you deal with are not pricks, they're just happy morons. So, up till now anyway, Costa Rica's been the only Latin country that lets you dump energy into the grid and run your meter backwards. However, no refunds, even if the law says you've got one coming. But that was then. Now, miracle of miracles, and there was a big time lag, other Latin American countries are coming online. And the latest one to offer the same as Costa Rica? Guatemala. So, for example, you set up your solar system, make sure it's set up so that it can tie back into the grid, call the electric company, they'll put in a meter that runs both forward and backward, and you too could zero out your electric bill. But again, no checks. But who cares, as long as you pay no bill, right? Always a great idea here in Latin America, and especially in the Caribbean islands, where the electric kilowatt hour rates are some of the highest in the world. So, for example, if you're up in Illinois and you do a solar installation on your home, they might tell you your payback period's 10 or 12 years, all based on kilowatt hour usage and the electric rates, right? Well, down here in Latin America, no matter if you're in the Altiplano, where you have very minimal electric use, or you're at sea level and you use a lot of air conditioning, it's easy to see you could have a payback period of 4 or 5 years, more than twice as fast as a normal home installation up in the States. Oh, and by the way, since in most Latin American countries, the electric power companies are either privately owned or a joint government-private corporation. If, for example, you call the electric company in Guatemala and say you need to have a new meter put in, one that'll run forward and backward, they'll probably be there within a couple of days. However, in Costa Rica, where they've still got a lot of government utility monopolies, you're looking at a couple months, unless you know somebody or grease some palms. I know to Bernie Sanders types this is heresy, but isn't it funny that when you privatize a utility, all of a sudden your customer service and your customer satisfaction index increases dramatically? Simply amazing. You dial them up, no busy signal, no recording, someone actually answers the phone. So do you pay more for that? Usually, unless there's lots of competition like many cell phone companies, but there's no competition with the power companies, so they do gouge you compared to first world power companies, which is all the more reason to go solar and get the hell off the grid, or at least mostly off the grid. Anyway, stay tuned for a show, maybe two, on exactly how to go off the grid here in Latin America. And you know, as for me, I kind of know what I'm talking about, being an engineer and the fact that I'm doing a solar installation right now. Yep, I'm on my way to going completely off the grid myself. Even better yet, well, I'll save that discussion for later. Though, I will say that people say, Johnny, why'd you wait so long? Solar's been available for a long, long time now. Well, it all boils down to the batteries. I didn't want to use 100-year-old ancient lead-acid battery technology. It's out there, all right, and it works. But they're extremely heavy and highly inefficient. And now that Tesla, LG, and Panasonic have pretty much perfected lithium-ion battery technology, that's exactly what I've been waiting for. And the fact that solar panels are now so cheap, you can buy them for 50 cents a watt. Say what? Yep, that's what I said. Now, that might not mean much to most of you, but to engineering and technical types, for years and years, we've been saying the magic number to get everybody on board to do solar panels and solar energy is to get the technology down to $1 a watt. So, for example, if you needed 5,000 watts of solar panels to run your system, and these days, believe it or not, you could do that with 15 panels or less. That part of the setup would cost you $5,000, right? Buck a watt. Aha, well, we reached that magic goal about 1 or 2 years ago. Now, we're down to around 50 cents a watt. So, if you need 5,000 watts of solar panel for your system, which is a lot, by the way, down here, you'd never need that much. Maybe half. Anyway, at 5,000 watts, that's $2,500 for the solar panels. And now, you know, most decent panel manufacturers give a 20 to 30 year guarantee. That means after 20 or 30 years, they'll still be putting out 90% of their rated power. Again, I'll be doing a show or two on that. So you'll be able to follow along with me as my step-by-step do-it-yourself project goes along. By the way, I've ordered all my stuff already, just waiting on it, so stay tuned. Now, I know a lot of you get this program from PRN. That's Gary Null's station, the health fitness renaissance man out of New York. And personally, I listen to almost every Gary Null show that I can. Now, the other day I was listening, and he talked a bit about traveling to foreign countries. And you know, I always talk about how the best way to live in Latin America with your own plan B is off the gringo tourist trail or slightly away from the gringo tourist trail. That way, as I've heard some new green expats say, they can pop in and out and get their gringo fix when they need it. Fortunately, I got over that phase probably 20 or 25 years ago. Anyway, some gringos, especially fresh green gringos, do need to get that fix, especially if their Spanish sucks. Anyway, I'd like to paraphrase a bit on what Gary Null has to say. He's a world-class off-the-tourist-trail traveler, you know. Man, does he hit it on the head. He says, when we look at the tourist industry, it's set up so you don't really learn a thing about the culture. You only get to see and mingle with the locals they allow into those big, fancy resorts and well-known tourist traps. You'll see lots of uniformed guards in those resorts, some of them with guns. And pretty much all the locals you see are there to act as your servants. Meanwhile, those locals see us partying in our luxury rooms and suites. At the all-inclusives anyway, all the booze and food you can eat. Half of the food which we throw away. Here we are in their country, hanging out at their most beautiful beaches, most of which they cannot go to themselves. Again, because many of the best beaches are part of a big exclusive luxury complex. So you, as a tourist, are only enjoying one out-of-context part of a big, complex, fascinating culture. But most tourists don't want to know about that. Then he says, what if you choose not to go to a resort or a beach, but you go inland and actually mingle with the real people? Nope, for the average tourist, that's not usual at all. What if you really did get into their communities, see how they live, work, survive? What if you were to sit down and ask them how they feel about all the foreigners coming into those multi-million dollar resorts where they themselves might work but could never possibly afford? And with all the millions flowing into those resorts from first world tourists, it seems as if not one penny ends up going into the local communities. Even though those scruffy little towns adjacent to those big complexes are the source of all the workers, they've got terrible infrastructures, polluted water, and bad or no sewage systems at all. And the roads that take the workers from their little towns to the big resort are pathetic. They're loaded with potholes and flood out when it rains. Meanwhile, the roads right next door in the resort are perfect. Then he warns against living on a Caribbean island, saying that none of them have a sustainable future. Boy, is he right about that. First of all, everything that's manufactured has to be imported. Look at Puerto Rico. Look at Haiti. But you know, you have to have an escape plan, a plan B. That's insurance. I know. A lot of people think they're going to tough it out up in the States. You might be an optimist about your own skills when the reset button is pushed. But you know the old saying, you're an optimist until all the facts are in, right? For my money, the best place for your plan B is the Altiplano in Latin America. There's 101 reasons for that, and I talk about them all the time on the show. However, you know, hitting the beaches for a couple days, a week or two, is always a fun and cool thing to do. And if you choose your Altiplano region correctly, you can accomplish that beach vacation thing anytime you want by driving just an hour or two away. Now, I know most of you listeners are way too smart to think that if you're a prepper in the States, you're going to be able to live comfortably without dramatically lowering your standards. Your lifestyle will suffer and you'll be looking over your shoulder all the time too, which is why so many of you listeners have taken steps towards your own plan B here in Latin America. It's the one place you can maintain or actually have a higher standard of living on much less dough than you're spending right now. Thus, my expat insider seminars, so you can get boots on the ground and see for yourself. How do you think I got started doing seminars anyway? I got way too many emails from people saying, Johnny, you have to show us this stuff. That said, there's still time to sign up for my January 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. Plus, the early bird discounts are still in effect. Just go to the newexpat.com website and check it out. Don't forget to add a few extra days to the front or back end of the trip to hang with the John Galt crew. You won't regret it. However, if you just can't make it down and you're scratching your head deciding just how to get that plan B started, you really need to take my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Check out my free video that explains it all at expatplanb.com. And while you're at it, download my free Plan B phone consultation form. It'll give you a lot of good ideas. That's at thenewexpat.com website too. So what's it going to be? You going to stock up on ammo, tang, and freeze-dried food? Or is the ultimate goal to watch the first world implode from a nice, safe distance here in Latin America?
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.